जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Varadhari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Varadhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Ravanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivaradhari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Varadhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Varadhari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Varadhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Swami Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Jai Srila Prabhupada. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate
vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
So we read today chapter 7, text 30 of the Bhagavad Gita as it is, and I'll read the Sanskrit. I'm not sure if we have it. Oh, maybe. Chapter 7, it's the last verse in chapter 7. It's taking a while to get there. Okay. There we are. And click on it. Yeah. And go down. There we go. The first word in the verse is a little intimidating because it's all joined together. Sadi Bhutadi Daivang Mam. Satyagyam chaye vidhu. Prayana kale pichamam. Te vidur yukta chetasaha. Translation, we go down. Those in full consciousness of me, who know me, the Supreme Lord, to be the governing principle of the material manifestation of the demigods and of all methods of sacrifice, can understand and know me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even at the time of death. Purport. Persons acting in Krishna consciousness are never deviated from the path of entirely understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the transcendental association of Krishna consciousness, one can understand how the Supreme Lord is the governing principle of the material manifestation and even of the demigods. Gradually, by such transcendental association, one becomes convinced of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and at the time of death, such a Krishna-conscious person can never forget Krishna. Naturally, he is thus promoted to the planet of the Supreme Lord, Goloka Vrindavan. This seventh chapter particularly explains how one can become a fully Krishna-conscious person. The beginning of Krishna consciousness is association of persons who are Krishna-conscious. Such association is spiritual and puts one directly in touch with the Supreme Lord, and by his grace, one can understand Krishna to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At the same time, one can really understand the constitutional position of the living entity and how the living entity forgets Krishna and becomes entangled in material activities. By gradual development of Krishna consciousness in good association, the living entity can understand that due to forgetfulness of Krishna, he has become conditioned by the laws of material nature. He can also understand that this human form of life is an opportunity to regain Krishna consciousness, and that it should be fully utilized to attain the causeless mercy of the Supreme Lord. Many subjects have been discussed in this chapter: the man in distress, the inquisitive man, the man in want of material necessities, knowledge of Brahman, knowledge of Paramatma, liberation from birth, death, and diseases, and worship of the Supreme Lord. However, he who is actually elevated in Krishna consciousness does not care for the different processes. He simply directly engages himself in activities of Krishna consciousness and thereby factually attains his constitutional position as an eternal servitor of Lord Krishna. In such a situation, he takes pleasure in hearing and glorifying the Supreme Lord in pure devotional service. He is convinced that by his doing so, all his objectives will be fulfilled. This determined faith is called Dridhavrata, and it is the beginning of Bhakti Yoga, or transcendental loving service. That is the verdict of all scriptures. This seventh chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is the substance of that conviction. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnanam Jana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Chapter 7 is considered to be the beginning of the real exposition of Krishna consciousness. So, in previous chapters, Krishna does not reveal very much of himself. You know, we say that the goal of Krishna consciousness, and the goal, indeed the ultimate goal of life, is to know and love God. That is the essence of Krishna consciousness. And how to come to that goal. So, in previous chapters, Arjuna was questioning Krishna, and Krishna was more or less focusing Arjuna on Arjuna's situation, and how Arjuna should better himself, how Arjuna should engage himself in these different kinds of yoga. In chapter 2, Krishna explains the process of logic according to Sankhya Yoga. So he says, Arjuna, you are not understanding your position in life. You're not understanding your position in this world. And what is the position of Arjuna, and how does it apply to us? How it applies is that we're all suffering in this material world, and we all enter this world in total ignorance. This is a fact. There's no baby that leaves the mother's womb and immediately becomes a university professor. It just doesn't happen that way. So we're born in this ignorance, and according to the society, the family, the friends, the association that we develop in this life, we develop certain attitudes, certain understandings of what this material world is all about, and how to, combat the various inebrieties, the various pitfalls, the various pains, the various sicknesses, all these things that are sent in this material world to us as individuals. There is no one who is exempt. No human being on this planet is exempt from these adhyatmic, that's personal, difficulties, adibhotic, the difficulties that are imposed upon him from outside of himself in this material world, and adidaivik. Adidaivik is displayed that these are the destinies which are set out for one in this material world. If it is your destiny to be born in an American body, then you grow up to learn English as your mother tongue. You don't learn Russian unless you go to extreme lengths. It is your destiny, simply, that you are an American citizen by birth, and you don't become a citizen of any other country or whatever. And the same applies to the Russians, the French, the British, and so on and so forth. So these three things are there, adiyatmik, and this is actually the beginning of this verse, adibhuta, adidaiva, adiyagya. These things are there. And so the great sages, the great Vedic sages, they pondered these questions. Now the Vedas are a huge literature. Many different things are explained in the Vedas. There are many hymns to the various gods, demigods, semigods. There are various sacrifices that are, and these are all for the, all meant for the advancement of the human form of life. All meant for one's progress in this world. And generally, people think of progress, they think of material advancement, or they think of some intellectual advancement, or some material thing like this. This is the normal. This is the average. This is how people view the world. They want to make progress. They want to advance. Or at least, if they can't do that, they want to enjoy. And so as a result, people who enjoy too much, they become addicted to things and so on. So there are various modes of nature that exist according to who you are and your association and what you consider to be your particular goal in life. And this applies for everybody. It's not just for Arjuna. And this is the universality of the Bhagavad Gita. This is how it operates. So in the previous chapters, in chapter 2, Krishna tells Arjuna, listen, you have to apply logic to your situation. You don't want to fight this war. You don't want to kill your relatives. You don't want to cause all kinds of bloodshed. But at the same time, you have a duty to perform. And you should understand that your duty and who you are is actually more important to you, for you, than your sentimental considerations of who are your relatives and who are your friends and so on and so forth. You have a duty to perform in this world. And most of us aren't called upon to kill our guru or to kill our relatives or to... We have much more mundane kinds of duties to perform in this world. But we have those duties to perform, and a lot of times we like to slack off and we like to shirk whatever we know we should do. And Krishna is saying, no, you should do these things. And this is the basis of what he calls karma yoga. Karma yoga means simply that you do your duty and you don't expect to get any tangible result from this. It is simply performed out of your understanding that this will advance yourself and advance the people around you according to your position in society. So this is karma yoga that Krishna explains in the third chapter. And Krishna explains that these duties should be done as a sacrifice to Lord Vishnu. Ultimately, you should direct that sacrifice, that duty that you have to perform as a duty to God. And so then in the fourth chapter, Krishna explains jnana yoga, the yoga of knowledge. And here, Krishna starts to reveal a little bit of who he is. Because Krishna explains that I first taught the sun god Vivasvan this process of yoga. And Arjuna's reply is, with the sun god, the sun is like millions of years old. How did you teach the sun god? Because then the sun god explains to the different demigods and finally to man this process of yoga. How do you do that? How did that happen? And Krishna says, well, many, many births, both you and I, have passed, and you can't remember any of them, and I can remember all of them. And he explains, I have a transcendental body. I have a body that is not material. I have a body that is not subject to the modes of material nature. He explains this in the fourth chapter. And whenever there's a problem, whenever people don't understand the goal of life, and whenever religious principles are lost, then at that time, I come and I instruct them. And so that's the basis of jnana yoga. And Krishna says, you surrender to a spiritual master, because the spiritual master can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth. You have to go to somebody who knows what the process is. Just as in medical doctors, they have to learn at the university, and then they have to do a residency. They have to go and work with other doctors, and other doctors have to show them how to do what they need to do. It's a very logical process. And so, finally, in chapter 6, Krishna explains the system of the Eightfold Mystic Path of Yoga, how to actually become totally enveloped, totally fixed, totally one-pointed in one's attempt to know and love God. And this process of meditation, called Dhyana Yoga, is very extreme. And is so extreme that Arjuna immediately, he rejects. He says, this process that you have explained is more difficult than to control the wind. No one can control the wind. So therefore, what do I do? Because I can't do this yoga system that you're outlining to me. And what happens if I try this? I try this yoga system and then I fail. Aren't I, you know, then I lose out in this life because I don't enjoy in this life. And then I lose out in the next because I didn't pass the test. I didn't make the grade. So what does one do? And of course, Krishna says that actually there's no loss or diminution in this process. You're never a loser. And it's a very nice quote. He says, one who does good, my friend, is never overcome by evil. So this is a wonderful advice. And it's interesting that this seventh chapter doesn't begin with a question by Arjuna. A lot of the chapters begin with a question by Arjuna. You know, Arjuna asks, what is this or what is that or how does this work or so on. But this is not one of those. And so in essence, it's a continuation from Arjuna's questioning that I can't really fulfill this kind of yoga that you're outlining. So therefore, where do I go? And so Krishna immediately explains to him, now I'm going to explain to you, he says, that path, knowing which there remains nothing further to be known. I'm going to tell you what's spiritual, I'm going to tell you what's material, and once you know this, you don't need to know anything else. Everything else is an optional extra. These things are the important things in life. And so now Krishna actually starts to explain scientifically what is going on in this material world. And it's very simple. At first he tells Arjuna, and don't think that this is just simple stuff. He says, Manusyanam sahasreshu, out of thousands of men, one may even seek perfection. And of those who actually attain perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. So this is, although it's simply explained in 700 verses of the Bhagavad Gita, and even though you may read it, it's not actually, reading and understanding is simply not the only way to develop this process of knowledge. What it is, as it's explained in this purport of the 30th verse, Dridavrata, it requires a firm commitment, a firm vow. And so he explains, first of all, Bhumi Rapo Nalo Vayu Kang Mano Buri Revacha, that earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego, these are my eight separated material energies. They're separated from me. They're not actually part of me. They're something I manifest. They're something I throw out there as a playing field, you might say. And aparayamitastvan yang prakritim vidime param. Apart from these material energies, there is a superior energy of mine. And that superior energy, that is all these living entities that you see, the birds, the bees, the trees, the flowers, the people, the animals, the fish, the birds, these are jiva bhuta. They are jiva entities. And they sustain and maintain the universe. These living entities, they maintain the universe. Yayedam dharyate jagat. Jagat means the universe. So this is Krishna starting to explain scientifically who I am and how I am involved with your life and everybody else's life, because I am actually that person. And so In previous verses, as I said, Krishna reveals a little bit of these things, but here, then the sixth verse of this chapter, Krishna explains, Etad yonini bhutani sarvanetyubhadharaya aham kritsnasya jagata prabhava pralayastada. And Krishna has not actually used this terminology before. He says prabhava. Prabhava means coming into being. So everything exists, comes into being because of me. That's etad yonini. Yoni means I'm the source of these things. So as a result, everything that comes into me, prabhava. And then he says pralaya also. Pralaya means the destruction. And also, I destroy everything. When its use is done, when its day is done, when it's up, when its time is up, then I destroy everything. And then Krishna says, Mataparataram nanyat kinchidasti dananjaya. There's no truth superior to me. Everything rests on me, just as pearls are strung upon a thread. It's such a beautiful poetic thing, that Krishna, he is the all-in-all. So this is Krishna's explanation. And then he goes into more detail even. So rasoham apsukonteya, I'm the taste in water. I'm the light of the sun and the moon. I'm the syllable om in the Vedic mantras. And I am the ability in man, paurusham rishu. So these things Krishna is. Then he says also, punyo ganda prativyanj, that I am the essence of flower, of the earth. The essence of the earth. I'm the fragrance of the earth. And I am the ability in man. I am the strength of the strong. You know, and finally, he even says, because he's mentioned the three modes of material nature before, he says, I emanate the three modes of material nature, yet I am completely above them, the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance that control and determine the path that everyone is on. That I am even beyond these things, even though they emanate from me, yet I am beyond them. And then he says, Daivihesha gunamayi mama maya durakyaya. That this material energy of mine is very, very difficult to overcome. But if you have faith in me, if you surrender unto me, then very quickly you can cross over it. Very quickly. So at this point, this is how Krishna is explaining who he is. And so such a breadth of explanation, so we can have some faith that this is how Krishna operates. And he explains also that there are four kinds of men who have no interest in Krishna consciousness. And from the demoniac to the... It's interesting, the Naradama. The Naradamas are, they're called the lowest of men. Why are they the lowest of men? They're the lowest of men because even though they have talent, they have intelligence, they're still just not interested. You know, they just don't get it. You know, it's just somehow that's their situation in life. And they're very unfortunate. They are the lowest of men. And then Krishna explains, actually, but there are four kinds of pious men that take to Krishna consciousness. Those who are in distress, those who want some material gain, those who are curious, and those who are in knowledge. Those four kinds, they will take up Krishna consciousness, and they each have their motivation. But Krishna says, of those four kinds of men, the man who is in knowledge, the jnani, him I especially... I have a special interest in him. I encourage him. I like to cultivate. I like him to cultivate this knowledge of me. See? And so these are the people who surrender to Krishna. And then Krishna explains, however, people who are attracted to material life, who are attracted to sense gratification, they generally worship the demigods. They want quick results. How many people in this material world You look at the stock market, you know, you think on the one hand, the economy, we want the economy to grow, you know. But the people in the stock market, some of them are even day traders, can you imagine? And they're in this gambling mode, they're in this passion, in this frenzy to somehow just beat the system, just get ahead. You know, they have small intelligence, Krishna says. And you know, there's an old southern, he calls them actually upamedasam, very small knowledge, small intelligence. You know, and there's an old saying in the South, you can't fix stupid, you know. And so that's their situation, is that that's how they are. They can't help themselves, you know. And we know that actually you can fix stupid, but it requires the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. It requires pious activity. It requires those things. So, and such... of course, we aren't in our society so much concerned with that. These people take to demigod worship. In our society, we don't have that anymore. That went out with the Romans and the Greeks when Christianity came in, I think the 4th century AD. So we lost this whole demigod worship angle on material advancement. But it was a very important thing. And it's interesting, though, that Krishna says sataya sharadaya, that people who do worship the demigods, I give them the faith. I help them, actually, to develop this faith and this determination, you know, this determination of advancement. But you should know that the benefits they get from this worship are given by me alone. I'm actually the arbiter of whether they get these things or not. They may perform these kinds of worship, but actually it is all meant for me. And this is an interesting thing because there's another religious sect. They say that God says, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." You know, it's a very sectarian kind of thing. It's in the Bible. You know, no other gods before me. But Krishna doesn't say that. So it's an interesting... I don't know how the ecumenical community or the interfaith devotees who are interested in interfaith preaching, you know, deal with this concept, but that is Krishna's concept, that he likes to help people who are at least a little bit wanting to increase their situation and to develop faith. So that was an interesting sidelight. And then... Krishna explains in text 24 of Yaktam Vyaktim Apanam that unintelligent men who do not know me perfectly think that I am impersonal because they do not know my superior higher nature, which is imperishable and supreme. So this imperishable, this word avyayam, Krishna uses, it means imperishable, it means everlasting in a different context. So this is a beginning, at least, of Krishna explaining the difference between the personal and the impersonal, which later on he takes up in the 12th chapter. So this Bhagavad Gita is a continuum, a philosophical continuum, how Krishna is explaining all these things to Arjuna, and Arjuna also is starting to get the picture from this chapter 7. And then Krishna explains that he's never manifest to the unintelligent and the foolish. And for them, he says, for them I'm covered by my yoga maya potency. This is a very esoteric concept, that Krishna has a spiritual world, a spiritual mode of operation and being, which is not available to those who are unintelligent and foolish, because Krishna says, they do not know that I am unborn and infallible. And then Krishna goes into a few more attributes of his that he says that I know everything that has happened in the past. I know the present, and I know the future, all things yet to come. And I also know all living entities. I know everyone in this world. I'm within them, understanding their every move, their every wish, their every thought. But me, he says, no one knows. No one knows me. And all living entities, born into ignorance, into delusion, because they're bewildered by the dualities that arise from desire and hate. Icha dvesha samutena, dvandva mohena bharata. So these two dualities, desire and hate, this is what's overwhelming people's consciousness. And then the grace, by the grace of pious activities in previous lives, those people whose sinful activities are completely eradicated, they become free from these dualities and engage themselves in my service with determination. And this is where this verse, Bhajante Mam, they worship me, Dridhavrata, with this total determination, this great vow. And then Krishna, so, and these are all new concepts basically for Arjuna. And he says, Jara Marana Mokshaya, Mama Shritya Yatantiye, that persons who are endeavoring for liberation from old age and death take refuge in me in devotional service. And then finally in this verse 30, Krishna introduces another concept, prayana kale. That is the time of death. That at the time of death, people who are following this path will come to me. And this is setting up, this verse 30 is setting up this adibhutam, adidaivam, adiyagyam. This is setting up for the next chapter of Bhagavad Gita, of chapter 8, where Arjuna actually asks Krishna, please explain to me, what is adibhuta, what is adiyagya, what is adidaiva, what is Brahman, what are all these things? And then Krishna is going to further reveal himself, reveal his personality, reveal his operation within this world and how he interacts with the different living entities. So this chapter 7 is the foundation for the understanding of Krishna, and so it is very important for us as devotees, and it's a wonderful exposition by Krishna. So at this point, I'd like to ask if there are any questions, comments that anyone would like to ask. Yes. We have the microphone here today.
You mentioned that there are no demigods in other religions. But if you look at modern society, people worship icons in society. For example, there might be a pop star, music icon. There's a frenzy for possessing his things. Like for the deity, any small thing, a flower for us is worshipable. We want to possess it. Similarly, people in society will buy somebody's napkin, somebody's shirt, you know, so they're worshipping also. Their gods are different.
It's not exactly an institutional situation. If you take the rise of Islam, Islam arose because of the degradation, you might say, of demigod worship. I think in Mecca there were 365 gods that were being worshipped. And they kind of had a monopoly on that worship. So you had to come to Mecca, you had to make your offering to the demigods, and this way your life would make progress in life. So, but this is a distorted reflection. It's a perverted reflection of demigod worship. Well, people worship football teams. People worship all kinds of things. You know, it's championship day today, and the NFL, yeah, also. So a lot of people are very much engrossed in these things. So this is, you know, this is the foolishness of the age. Every age has its foolishness, and we should be aware of how foolish it is, and for the most part we are. As devotees of Krishna, we're aware of this foolishness, and we have some attachments due to past conditioning, past lives, even from previous lives also. These things are coming, and due to association in this life, so many associations. Is there? Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you. It was a nice review of Chapter 7, a lot of key elements there. Unfortunately, I was taking notes, so I probably missed some things you said. I was just wondering, in verse number 24, he talks about how the less intelligent people think that he was impersonal before, but assume this personality. Did you mention that?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, because that's a key point for me. The chapter is so wonderful because he like kicks out the impersonalist, he kicks out the demigod worship, and all these things that people distracted by, really.
Yeah.
And of course, the thing about these people worshiping these heroes and stuff, they're not exactly demigods, because the demigods' worship is in the mode of goodness, and worshiping the demons and ordinary people is in the mode of passion, and worshiping the ghosts and spirits is in the mode of ignorance. So it's definitely it's not as good as worshiping the demigods.
No. And actually, at least if you worship the demigods, you get some result. From worshiping the football teams, you don't get any result at all. You know, you get disappointment because, you know, they usually lose. Only one team wins the Super Bowl. The other 31 teams are losers, you know. So, and that's only for 1 year. And then the next year, you know, they're going to lose anyway. So anyway.
At the football game, somebody asked who I was in favor of 1 year. Said, we just want both sides to win spiritually.
So. Yes.
That's why we're here chanting.
Right.
You know?
Very good.
And one time, we chatted at the Seminoles and the Gators game, and there was one Gators fan and a Seminoles fan, and they're holding hands, and they're dancing in a circle. It was really awesome.
So they both won. That,
yeah.
It's wonderful. Okay, one devotee there. Yeah.
You mentioned the verse "Icha Dvesha Samutena." I've always wondered about a more elaborate explanation of what the Icha and the Dvesha are.
I did look it up, and I did Icha Dvesha Samutena Dvandra Mohena Bharata Sarvabhutam Samoham Sargayanti Parantapa. Well, the main thing is the mohena, the moha. Moha means illusion. That desire and hate are the causes of illusion. And desire, we understand desire and hate, these are the distorted reflection of situations in the spiritual world where, you know, there are so many rasas in the spiritual world, and so Krishna has these activities with the gopis where sometimes they're angry with him because he doesn't, you know, do what they want, and sometimes their overwhelming desire is simply to serve Krishna, and so when they're frustrated in this, Krishna frustrates them in this, then they become angry. And they start to chastise Krishna, things like that. So this is, in this material world, desire and hate are a distortion of these rasas that exist in the spiritual world. So we understand that that our reality is is distorted by this illusion. This is our illusion, that we're thinking that everything that's good for that my body and my mind are good for me, and everything that are bad for me I should hate, this desire and hate. But as Krishna's dilemma was there, Arjuna's dilemma was there, that he didn't want to kill Bhishma. He didn't want to fight against his relatives and his guru, but his duty required it. So he had to overcome that desire and hatred and simply rise above, nistraigunya bhavarjuna, that rise above the three modes of material nature. So that you can exercise your duty without the illusion of desire and hate, material desire and hate, in that way.
Can we say that sometimes we see a person and they're pretty successful or they're recognized, and immediately we have that envy of them. We say, why does it have to be him, right? So we have that envy. Then we have a desire to obtain our position, all right? So we have the envy and the desire. So I'm thinking that that's kind of the desire and hate. We are envious of the Supreme Lord, and at the same time, we want to get his position. So, and then we hate him because we can't do it. You know, so kind of that's what I see it as. I don't know if I'm correct.
Yes, this is correct. That our desire for profit, adoration, and distinction, these are the three. Impetus. Those three things are the impetus for material activity, and they arise because, as you say, we have that envy, and this is why we're in the material world, in order to somehow fulfill those desires and those envies that are separate from Krishna. And according to our pious or impious activities, we get the facility to do certain things or not to do them. One interesting thing is that in the Mahabharata, further on in the story, Yudhishthir Maharaj is very reluctant to fight against people and things like that, and especially against the Kauravas. But Krishna tells him, why are you worrying about this? The Kauravas, because they're fighting the good fight, they're Kshatriyas, even though they're fighting for the wrong cause, but simply because they're Kshatriyas, they all go to the heavenly planets. And especially they're fighting against Krishna. If they are killed in the presence of Krishna, then they become liberated. And there's a scene in the Mahabharata where actually they go to the heavenly planets after Duryodhana is killed, and they see Duryodhana is enjoying all kinds of much better things than he had on this earth. You know? And so we're thinking that this material world, this material body, our mind, that these things are the all-important things in life. They're not the all-important things in life. For the next life, we're told that if we engage in pious activities, thy life will be much better. So why be attached? But we can't help it. What's it? You can't fix stupid. That's how we are. And because we don't see these things. The gentleman, the devotee there.
So this is a hypothetical question. If for some reason the Krishna movement, ISKCON, became bankrupt, could we still worship Krishna, be in service in Krishna, if there was no money or funds for the movement?
The Krishna movement. I think you have to define the Krishna movement to be able to answer a question like that. But actually, Krishna says, Name Bhakta Pranashyati. My devotee is never vanquished. So materially, things may go up, they may go down. We may have to preach under the tree, as the six Goswamis. They were the most opulent people on the planet. but they lived under a different tree every night. They had nothing. And yet they were the most elevated and exalted personalities on the planet. So there's no question of, you know, bankruptcy or things like that in Krishna consciousness.
So do we need material things to worship Krishna?
Technically, no. But patram pushpam palam toyam, that Srila Prabhupada explains in the Bhagavad Gita, through Krishna explains, if one offers me a leaf, a flower, a fruit, some water, then I'm satisfied. So Prabhupada says anybody can get a fruit or a flower or a leaf or some water and offer it to Krishna. So there's no lack or diminution. And we see that actually everything is going on rather nicely. I was just last week in Houston Temple, and I mean, it's marvelous. They have a wonderful facility there. Wonderful, they're building a wonderful new temple. They have all opulence, and you know, the devotees are very conscientious and serving Krishna, and everything is going very well indeed. So if you have doubts or misgivings in that way, I'd say go to the Houston Temple, and there you will see there's no problem. Actually, even our centers in India, Mayapur, Vrindavan, Mumbai, Juhu, Chaupati, in Chennai, all these places have these wonderful Krishna centers. And so I really don't see, we are living in a golden age at the moment. It's just plain and obvious. Now, after we understand that Lord Chaitanya, the Puranas say that after 10,000 years, things will deteriorate and everything will be lost. All spiritual consciousness will be lost, but you know, in the meantime, we have to have faith and at least for ourselves become Krishna conscious and go back home, back to Godhead. Jai. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for your attention.